our heads for a word of prayer. Heavenly Father, we're so blessed and so glad to be here, and we're so glad that you're here with us. We ask that your Spirit will open our minds and our understanding and open our hearts to understand what it is that you would like us to know. Amen. Well, the Moses strategy. I don't want to repeat too much of what I said this morning. Did anybody hear the 9 o'clock meeting? Well, there's a few. Okay. Well, the Moses strategy, I want to just tell you a little bit about the Sunday event that we had that was called the Moses Strategy Celebration. And that is an annual event. And I know I've been talking to a few of you who have remembered God's work in your will or in some other way through a planned gift. Now, I didn't know about it, but we always want to invite everybody who has remembered the Lord's work through a planned gift. And we'll fall into that category. At the Sunday event, we want to say thank you because it's important. We appreciate the people of Alberta who care enough about their local church, because if the local churches, the local conference isn't strong, it's really hard for us to reach out. We have a lot of young people, you know, who benefit from this camp. I mean, I talked to a father whose daughters are now grown in their 20s, late 20s, and he said, you know, they don't get in touch with their high school buddies, even though they saw them every day. The friends that they made at camp meeting are the friends that they're still in touch with. So it's really important that we keep our community strong, and we really appreciate the people who remember that. So that's what we do at the Moses Strategy. We get together, like-minded people, and we celebrate God's goodness, and, you know, we're grateful. The Moses Strategy, does anybody know or have a clue where that title might come from? There's, you know, it really comes from the story about Moses at the burning bush. And when God called Moses to deliver the children of Israel from slavery, he really didn't feel equal to the task. He said, you know, why me? What have I got? And God said, what's in your hand? Well, it was just a rod, but with God, that rod performed miracles. It was much more than he thought it was when God first talked to him. And that's what planned giving is. You look at what's in your hand. And you may not think it's much, but when we take a look and walk through these different tools, you might find that it's more than you thought it was, or it could be more than it is now. So we're going to go through several of those, well, all the tools, the complete Moses strategy. And the basic tool, surprise, surprise, is a will. Everybody needs to have a will for many reasons. And that's why we have the wills at camp, because we don't want cost to be a barrier to anybody. When my father passed away a couple of years ago, I was really nervous because my dad had resisted having a will. And I don't know if any of you know Fred Newman. You can understand that. But fortunately, just, you know, a few months before he passed away, I still don't know what came over him, and neither does my mother, but he came home and he said, Elsie, we got to get wills. And within a few weeks, everything was squared away. And it was such a relief. So that's one reason why you should have a will, is to relieve the stress from your family, because it really, you know, makes a difference. It makes a difference in cost. If you don't have a will, then the family would have to go to the court and make an application. And that's going to cost something, and it's going to be stressful, and it's just not that much fun. So in 2012, the Alberta government took a hard look at wills and the way the Family Relief Act works. And they kind of reworked it all, and it's not as bad as a lot of people were afraid of. They still haven't come down with how the Family Succession Act is going to be applied in all cases, but it's a good start. And one of the good things about it was, if you had a will and get divorced, there is a presumption, even if you don't change your will, that your ex-spouse is out of the will. So that was I thought that was a step in the right direction. It's a lot of people were very afraid of what it would be, but I think the Alberta government really tries to make sure that people are treated equitably, but you don't necessarily want them telling you what to do with your assets either. So make the choice yourself and do the will. Now, I'm not sure.
Can I ask a question, please?
Sure.
Should will be updated every so often?
Yes. Sort of, you know, sometimes 10 years is thrown out as a kind of a standard. You know, you should look at it every 10 years at least. Or if there's a major life event, you know, if you get married, you definitely need to look at your will. So, you know, whenever you have a life event like that, it's a good thing to do a new will, or at least take a good hard look at it. Today, I would like to actually focus on stories, because they help us remember things. And this young couple, the Boycos, I know some of you know them, Josh and Rachel, they made a will for one of the best reasons. They have young children. And a will is the easiest and really perhaps the only practical way to make sure that you can choose your child's guardian if something should happen to you, to the parents. And while they were at it, they did a number of smart things. They really thought through what their values were. Earlier this week, we talked about wills that keep the peace. And as we've been doing the wills at camp this week, I've been sharing with people the statement of faith. And people are really excited about it because they want to make that last testament, that last testimony to their faith and give context to what's going to be in their will. And that's what the Boycos did. They realized that camp had been really important to them. That church, Sabbath school, was really important to their five-year-old. That was like the highlight of his week. And they really wanted to make sure that the community that would be caring for their children, if they weren't on the scene, was a strong one. And so they agreed to let me make a little video about their process and their story, and they're a lot of fun. So if you haven't seen the Means and Meanings videos, they're online at the Alberta Conference website under Planned Giving, and there's six of them there. So, and there'll be more. I make one as a companion for each Alberta Adventist news, because I do a little column that talks about a gift strategy, but it's the people that are really exciting and what it means to them. So I like to do a little video so that you can hear more about the people behind the gift. So I think most of you have that in front of you, the information for looking that up online too. Okay, charitable life annuities. That's new this year. Well, the commercial ones have been around for a long time. They work a little bit differently, but the Alberta charitable annuity, we use the example of a couple aged 75. And the rates vary depending on your age. The younger you are, the lower the pay every month, a little lower rate. And the older you are, the higher it is. At the age of 75, if you're a couple, it's almost 5% annuity rate. And that's locked in for the rest of your life. It never is going to change. It doesn't matter what's happening in the markets. Doesn't matter if, you know, the stock market crashes. That's what you're going to get every single month. In this case, on $100,000, it would be $400 a month, or just about $5,000 per year. And one of the things that people like about it is that dependability. They also like the fact that if there is money left over after it's invested well, in this case, we've invested, the Alberta Conference has invested well, and Keith is here. Keith has a background with securities, and he was with Royal Trust for many years. So he has a lot of really good connections and is very astute at the markets and good advisors. We follow the Church in Canada guidelines for investment, which are conservative, so that it protects the investment. And Chuck Simpson, those of you who remember Chuck, the first Monday presentation, he indicated if it's invested well for the first 2 or 3 years, you're well on your way, or the church is well on its way to having a really good, solid gift at the end of it. And in this case, we're assuming about a $32,000 gift out of that because of good investment and life expectancy. Any questions about the annuity?
Do you arrive at that $32,000 by saying that you're paying out $400 a month and that this couple is expected to live for another 10, 12 years and so that'll eat up $68,000? How did you arrive at that
$50,000? I arrived at that through a computer program. It's a program created by an actuary, and with certain assumptions built in. So that's.
So I guess what I'm saying, the original value of the $100,000 that was invested keeps getting depleted.
Yes.
Like you've invested this $100,000 a year, the conference is getting the growth on it.
Mm-hmm. And the conference then
is paying you 4.78%.
Right.
You're expecting obviously more growth on it than 4.78% because, when the first person dies in that annuity.
Okay, let's
do the microphone. When the first person passes in that joint annuity, does that rate still continue for the remaining person?
Yeah, the question is, does the rate continue for the second person after the first spouse passes away? And yes, it does. Yeah, the rate never changes as long as both those people, or one of those people, is alive. Yeah.
What is that $100,000 invested in?
Well, Keith, would you like to answer that? Right. The question is, what's the money invested in?
Okay, we use financial investment people, and the one in particular for annuities is a conservative Christian, and so the investments, we have to abide by the NAD policy, which is there, it's to protect principal, you know, your capital amount. But the investments are very looked at to make sure that they fit within our denominational's morality and ethics. So that's how it's done. The NAD policy is that half is invested in cash type investments and 50% in stock at this time. And that's the maximum we can go up to in terms of stock on that.
Second to that question then is, this does not filter, this cannot apply to the local church, does it? The local church cannot invest their building fund money in an investment like this.
No, the local church, and in fact, the local conference cannot all either. The local conference has an investment policy that the local church can invest up to 1 year in cash, in the securities under up to 1 year. The conference can go up to 4 years, but they are still by policy, it has to be in grade A bonds and commercial paper, government, GICs. There is some allowance for rate resettable preferred shares. So it's in at the conference level, and at the local church level, it is in the capital preservation is what the church looks for.
Okay. So, as I said, there's another form of this, which is a commercial annuity, and Keith and Nari Clouton employed a commercial annuity. Same principle, except the difference, one of the key differences is if there's money at the end of the two lives, the insurance company keeps it if it's commercial. If it's the Adventist Alberta Conference annuity, then the church gets the gift to continue its work. So Keith and Nari, at the time they did their annuity, sat down with a planning professional who's an Adventist, Lyndon Haas, and he understands the charitable intent and what it, what makes the Adventist tick. So I always like to find people who understand that part of who we are, that it's we want to do something good for other people in the world. So Lyndon is one of those people, and Lyndon sat down with them, and we'll let you hear talk a little bit about this. Not sure if that was what I intended. I didn't want to miss that. Keith and Nari, does everybody know Keith and Nari? Yeah. They, Keith, I'm having technical difficulty. Keith and Nari, if you haven't heard their whole story, it's in the Means and Meanings video series, but they had a travel company, and they did tours on the cheap for Adventists, and they had a great deal of fun doing it. They did it for 25 years and then decided to retire the company. It was called Boomerang Tours, but Boomerang Tours came back. Eventually, last year, they took a group to Kenya. But in that little period where it was retired, Keith said, we've always been very careful with the money. We've built a little bit in for contingencies, and we've never had to use it. They ended up with $45,000, which they had put in RSP. And Lyndon said, you could put that money to work. You could put that into an annuity. And at the health and the age you are now, you could get a really good insurance policy that would pay a fixed amount, so they knew exactly what the return would be. And you can multiply your money by 3.5 times. So they decided that that was a good idea. And so that's what they did. They took the money from the annuity, turned the payments over to the insurance company to meet the premiums. So they used two of the tools. They used insurance and annuities to make their money grow 3.5 times.
It's overheated.
It's overheated.
Well, won't come back now until it cools down.
Oh, okay. So we're having technical difficulties here. But Keith and Nari were able to, because they're multiplying it 3.5 times, instead of benefiting just one of their favorite charities that had been meaningful to them, they were able to benefit not one but four. They named a scholarship in the family name. They gave a gift to the conference. They because they really believed in what the conference does. and they had felt they had received benefits. And A Better World was another beneficiary as well. And I had a little clip that I wanted to play for you, but we'll just see if the... Okay, we may go to Plan B. I have a handout of the PowerPoint. So. You can take one and pass it back. Okay. So if you flip over to the back of the second page, there's a little diagram. It's back in. Okay. So now you all have the handout. Okay, we're going to let Keith speak for him and Neri and tell it in their own words. Maybe not. How the diagram flows. The annuity is owned by the owner. They assigned the payments that they would ordinarily receive to the insurance company to cover the premiums, and they got, when every year when they make that premium payment automatically, they get a tax receipt from the church. So they get an ongoing benefit for the rest of their lives because the premium is being paid automatically and they get the deduction. So this is the little summary. Annual tax receipt, multiplied gift, and three and more charities benefit from the growth. RRSPs or RIFs can be designated right in the document. And one of the advantages of that is that it doesn't, it can be rolled over to the church. Just as I understood Don Chernowski to say, without a tax event. So, well, actually, I guess maybe there is a tax event. But I'm going to have to check with Don on that because that was kind of news to me. But he's a tax expert, so we'll look at that. Even if it is a taxable event, If you give no gift to the church, you're going to be giving, if you're in the 32% tax bracket, you're going to be giving $32,000 of $100 to Revenue Canada. And you're making a gift to them, and only $68,000 goes to your beneficiaries. Or if you give a gift to the church, designate the entire amount, Revenue Canada's out in the cold, you get $50,000 back in tax credits, and you can use the credit retroactively for the next year prior to death, or your estate can use it. So you may get money back from the previous year, or your estate may get it back. So instead of actually costing you your $100,000, which is a benefit to the church, it really only costs you or your beneficiaries $18,000. So you've made a wonderful gift to the church for a small cost. Marketable securities. This is the best tax deal going. If you have, say, bought TeleShares back in 1984, I think, AGT went private, everybody could afford TeleShares. I could afford TeleShares, and I was just out of school. So, unfortunately, I didn't keep them. But there would be big appreciation on that, and you would be paying capital gains on that appreciation. So, one of the wonderful stories in Alberta is the Camrose Miracle Church. There's so many miracles, you know, associated with how they even heard about it. And somebody came forward and said, I have a bunch of shares that I've been sitting on for 30 years, and I don't want to pay the appreciation, I don't want to pay the capital gain on that. I do would rather see the church benefit than Revenue Canada, or CRA. And so what they did was not cash them in. If you cash it in, it's taxable, but if you give it directly to the church as shares, then the church gets 100% of the value. And our policy is to sell it as soon as possible, so that, you know, if you're giving what you think you're giving, and we're getting what you think we're getting. And this illustration, if you were to sell them, and then, you know, you have good intent, give what the proceeds are to the church, you pay the tax on it first, the church would get 8,500 out of 10. If you give the shares directly, the church gets 10. You get a credit for 5. And so the real cost of the gift, you know, if you look at the difference between the after-tax benefit to you and the after-tax credit, the difference is only $3,500. So when you, for every dollar that you give away to the church gets free. So in the final tally, the church gets $10,000, the donor gets $5,000, CRA gets nothing. Actually, CRA loses money, because they're giving a benefit to the donor. They're giving $5,000 benefit to the donor. Another tool is the Alberta Conference Revocable Trust. And this is something for people who want to still hang on to the possibility that in case they have an emergency, they can access the money, but they want to do good. Mary Krizawaty was one of those people who loved to give money away. She lived simply, she felt enough, but she wanted to do good. And Mary was a teacher for all her career, for much of her life, she was a teacher. And what she liked about this setup was she gave the money to the church, and the church invested it, did all the bookkeeping, and she just told us when she wanted to give money to somebody. Like, you know, Mamoya Toscatin Native School. She was actually very instrumental in building the current school, made a major gift there. And so she had all the fun of giving money away, none of the stress. And when Mary passed away, whatever had not been spent in the trust, according to the terms of the agreement, the Alberta Conference would then be the beneficiary, and it would be used for education and evangelism. So there was some money left in the trust. And when Mary instructed the conference to give money to another organization or to itself, that was when Mary got her charitable tax receipt for that donation. Not at the creation of the trust, but only when the money was actually given away to someone else. So because Mary's had specified education or evangelism, one of the needs that had surfaced just prior to Mary passing away was the need for more iPads or training in iPad use for teachers in the Adventist schools, because something we're seeing more and more of is learning disabilities. It's across the board, not just in Adventist schools. Adventist education, actually, statistically, our kids do better than the average in public school. But yes, it's really an amazing thing. And even in Namawe Toscatin Native School, that's true. And you think about the odds that those kids face. But they do above average on the standardized tests. So we want to make sure that that never changes. And so the conference was able to buy 10 iPads to teach teachers how to use these iPads for learning disabilities. Because there's a lot of good applications out there, and they really seem to help the kids. So we think Mary would really have approved of that. We're going to, this is actually the last category in the tool chest, gifts of real estate, but it's one of my favorites because it's really versatile, and actually most anybody can do something with this. So we're going to look at a bargain sale, a partial interest and entire interest. A bargain sale is where, you know, the value of the piece of property is, well, in this instance, $6 million, but it's sold to for less to a charity. So the story with this picture is these were eight doctors at St. Helena Hospital in California, where I worked for a time before I came back to Alberta, because this is home. And these doctors had come to St. Helena Hospital as young men to start the heart program. As is wont to happen in Adventist institutions, there was no office space for them, and they had to build it themselves. But they did that gladly. They invested their money, and they became landlords. They rented not only to themselves, but to other doctors. But as they grew older, they started to realize that, some of them were retiring, some of them might not last forever. And that made them a little nervous because they were partners. And it's not a nice, neat event when a partner dies. It's kind of, you know, you're dealing with not just the partner, you're dealing with families and all of their assets. So they got a little nervous. So they had a problem, and one of them came to me and said, "What do you think?" And so I said, "How about a bargain sale?" We worked the numbers, and when it came down to it, we came to a number where they would be in the same position financially by giving the hospital, a $2.5 million donation. And these are fictitious numbers, they're not exact. But they were giving a substantial donation, but they'd be in the same place financially as if they'd stayed in business as landlords for another 2 years. And they said, "That's a no-brainer. We don't really enjoy being landlords that much." So they did the gift, And the hospital was happy because they really actually did need the space. And a year later, one of the partners passed away. And one of the remaining partners said, you know, we are so glad we did that when we did. And it was a very good thing for everyone. A gift of entire interest in land. Anybody here know Herb and Lorraine? You too. Wow. Are you from Raleigh?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, we've got a couple of people who do. But I am not surprised that the rest of you don't, because Herb and Lorraine are not Adventist. But Herb grew up with the Booths and knew the family, liked the Adventists, and he owned a piece of land next to the Adventist church. His lawyer, when they were doing tax planning, looked at all his assets and he said, Irv, you know, you're going to pay a whopping tax bill. And I know how much you hate to give money to Revenue Canada. You're not really doing anything with this land in Raleigh. Why don't you give it to charity? And Irv said, that's a good idea. I know just the charity. And so he gave it. He transferred title to the Raleigh Church. And the Raleigh Church did a number of nice things with it. I know that there was discussion about using it as collateral for the, you know, Camrose to be able to get their building. That's what I love about the Alberta Adventist community, is we help each other out. And it was, you know, an instrumental gift from God that Irv and his tax lawyer came up with this idea. So, you can see the numbers here, and again, they're fictitious numbers, but for illustration purposes, $50,000 lot that had appreciated significantly. The church got the entire value. He got a tax receipt, which Revenue Canada said, okay, you give the church a dollar, we're going to give you 50 cents back. And he was happy because the church had gotten the money instead of Revenue Canada. Oh. I'm not sure why this is. So the final score, Irv still had $1,700 in his pocket after the tax was offset, and the church had 50. CRA was in the hole $25,000. Now this one is perhaps my favorite real estate transaction. You don't have to assign the entire interest in the piece of land. You can just give part of it. And you can do it with any piece of property, a cottage, even farmland. But, you know, farms you have to be careful with because, as we know, farms are special. And what the process is, an actuary looks at how long or the value of your use for the rest of your life of that piece of land, and he assigns a value, in this case, $150,000. And so the donation is $250,000, and you get an immediate tax receipt that you can use for the next 5 years. Does that make sense? Okay, the concept is you never have to move off the land. You never have to move out of your house. You get to use it for as long as you live, and that's worth something to you. And the actuary says, okay, in this case, it's worth $150,000. So what the church gets then is title on a second title at Land Titles Office, and it's a residual interest. Yes, if the whole interest has been assigned when the donor passes away, then the church takes possession of the property. if only a portion of it has been assigned, like, you know, 10% interest, the church only gets 10% of whatever the proceeds of that sale might be.
How do they realize that 10% or 20% of the property then have to be sold?
The question is, how is that realized? Property does not necessarily have to be sold. There are different ways to... Okay. We've got a drum roll going here. Okay. I guess I'll keep talking. There are a few ways for the church to realize its portion. If, say, it's a piece of property that, you know, the other beneficiaries don't care about, they may want to sell it. That's easy. It could be that there is, if it's a corporation, or like a family corporation, there could be shares that are valued at a certain amount, and life insurance given to the shareholders. The shareholders can then turn around and use the life insurance to, you know, pay out the charity. That's another way. Or, you know, there's various combinations of that. And that's another thing. Larry's observation is that with one of the beauties of real property is it's you can borrow against it. So, you know, if it's $40,000 is the value of the interest, they can borrow that and pay that out over time. So in a place of residence, You never have to pay capital gain on your house, right? Because that's tax exempt. So what happens if you give a 1/5 interest to the church in your home? Well, we'll take a look at this example. I set this up for a farm, but it wouldn't have to be a farm. The value is $400,000, the market value, and the value of the life interest. The actuary says, you know, you're of an age, you know, you're 70. The value to you staying in on that piece of land is $150,000. So what you're giving, or the value difference is $250,000, but you only want to give away 1/5 of that. So you want to give away $50,000. And so you get a tax receipt for $50,000. The CRA says, okay, you get half of that back. So what you have done is you've taken money from the CRA because you were never going to give it to them in the first place. They have given you money that you can now use. One of the members that did this used it to pay off his credit cards because the interest was pretty high on the credit cards. He just got the money from CRA as a refund, a tax refund. So he had the cash in hand from CRA to use, you know, to pay off his credit card. You could use that for anything. You could use that, you know, for a church project. You could use it to help the kids through college. You could use it to, you know, fix up your home so that it, when you do sell it, the price and the value goes up. Question?
Do you get that tax receipt right away or only after you die?
You get the tax receipt right away. Yeah. Yeah. And the way it works at land titles is you have your current title. They do a second title that says the church has a 1/5 interest subject to the life of the donor. So nothing changes, and that's what I love about it. I mean, you stay in your home, you continue to cut the grass, and, you know, enjoy the flowers and put in the garden and all of that for as long as you want. And it's only when the property is sold or changes hands, when, you know, the proper title changes, that's when the charity gets its benefit. So again, the final score, the church gets, in this scenario, $50,000, the donor gets $25,000 in hand as a tax refund if you're, you know, if you're working for somebody, and you've paid that tax in, you get the cash back. CRA gets nothing. In fact, they're in a negative position because they've given you the tax refund. So I can think of four good reasons to give a residual interest in a place of residence. It's out of your estate, for one thing. And you know, for people who just want to keep the will just for the kids, for whatever reason, this is one way of doing it. You can give your gift to the church during life, but still have all the benefits of your home. You can use the money to help the kids now if they need it. And you can use CRA's gift to you to do something good. And the money that you have given to the church could, or you know, that money you got from CRA could be reinvested to, you know, grow more. So when you're thinking about planned giving, it really boils down to four questions. It's a question of values. Who can preserve the things and pass along the things that you value? Well, for a lot of people, the church is that institution. How do you want to be remembered? Like Mary Krizawadi, someone who wanted to do good and really did a lot of good and is helping give children a chance even today after she's passed away. And do you want the benefits now or later? So the final question, of course, what's in your hand? So,
let's say somebody sets this, we'll use your hypothetical figure to 400,000. Somebody sets this up now when they're, let's say, 40 or 60 years old. So the house is at 400,000. But they don't die until they're 85. The house may be worth 800,000 by then based on inflation and stuff. What happens in that situation?
Did you all hear that?
No.
Okay. Larry, you want to come up and repeat that?
You own a piece of property that's worth $400,000. You're 60 years old. You go through one of these scenarios where the $150,000 is the residual value expected for your life to use. But now you live to 85, and the house is now worth $800,000 due to inflation and so on. What happens in that situation?
The church still only gets a 1/5 interest. So if it's sold, the house is sold for $800,000, it gets 20% or 1/5 of the $800,000. And perhaps you invested your tax money that you got back from Revenue Canada, and that's grown as well. So you've got a little money in the bank, you can continue to maintain your lavish lifestyle. And so everybody wins. Any other question? Well, I will turn the time over to Keith. Did you have?
Nothing on the screen.
That's good. I asked Keith to help us understand a little bit more about what happens to money when you give it to the Alberta Conference.
Okay. I'm thankful for the rain. I've been really struggling with my breathing, with that smoke in the air. So I've been fighting for air, so I've been really tired of it. So it's good news for me. The only thing is, before it came, the radio said, don't worry, the smoke is in behind it. So, but it gives me a break for a while. The one thing I appreciate about the Seventh-day Adventist Church is it is very transparent, and I know there's a lot of questions on that, but if you want to know what the wage scale is, you can go to the North American Division website and look at they have the remuneration scale there. If you want to know what the tithe usage is, you just key into Google North American Division tithe usage, and it'll give you a whole scale. And that's, and I'm just reading, so on the tithe portion, now, let me just back up a little bit, because when Lynn first said she was doing the Moses strategy, it really pricked my ears, because a few years ago I attended a presentation by the lead economist for the Alberta Treasury Branch, and he was a proponent of Moses economics. And it is a line of economics that many economists use. And of course, that's based on economy that's based on tithe and offerings, fair wage for work done, where there is a limited amount of debt and there's relief for debt and all that. So there are economists who refer back to the Moses strategy, and they use it when they're advising politicians as well. So it's just something interesting that the world does view the Bible in many different ways. And so, as the person was mentioning the other day, there is more talk about finances, about three times as much on finances as there is prayer and other themes in the Bible. So maybe that's because we think a lot about money, so it has to talk to us in terms we understand. The tithe in the Seventh-day Adventist Church is restricted to the usage we can put on it. And I'll just go through them. It's for the support of evangelists, pastors, and Bible instructors. The second area is support of personnel who provide administrative leadership and services for evangelistic outreach and nurturing ministries of the church. These include conference officers, departmental directors, accountants, clerks, and office secretaries. The third is the expenses which are necessary to undergird the total evangelistic outreach and nurturing ministries of the church. Evangelism expense, conference office operating expense, evangelism equipment, campground and camp meeting operating expenses, not for capital. The one thing that tithe cannot be used for is the capital expenses of buildings. The support and functions which are considered essential to the evangelistic outreach and nurturing ministries of the church, in terms of education schools, and it's a percentage that would refer to the amount of Bible instruction in that. College and universities, literature evangelists, conference centers, operating again, media programs, retirement benefits for the workers, even though the retirement benefits aren't large, they do get a retirement, and so the tithe can be used for that. Church, here is the areas where tithe cannot be used. Local church maintenance and operating expenses. elementary school maintenance and operating expenses, secondary and higher education maintenance and operating expenses, and church, conference, and other institutional building projects. Those are funded from non-tithe sources. Now, in the Alberta Conference, we run a number of ministries. And under, we use Alberta Advances, our catch-all. So the offerings that come to Alberta Advance go to the various ministries. So we have our camp meetings, regional camp meetings, cultural camp meetings, ministries. We have local entity building projects. Now, the one area...
I just want to show people. This is a list of all the ministries in the Alberta Conference. It takes... And then the schools on the back,
yeah.
Right? So it takes a lot of money to make those work.
Yes. So, Lynn,
I didn't realize they had that. So,
yep.
So you already have a sheet with all those.
Or if you don't, you can pick it up here.
Yeah. So those are the. If you were to ask me what are the greatest needs of the Alberta Conference, and then we start looking at things like the Mamoe Atascutan Native School. In order to facilitate a high school, we just need to have a building there to do it. We're moving ahead, hoping that they're squeezing room here and there, but it's not going to be enough to maintain the number of students that is there. And so that is one of the projects. We have currently 26 churches and companies that don't have buildings. And being able to rent a building today is a lot harder for a lot of our congregations than ever before. We have some groups that are able to get a building, but they are restricted to the hours from 9 a.m. to 12. And if they go over that, they have to pay additional money for every 15 minutes that they're over that time. Plus, it really hampers the ability of a church to run programs, and particularly for their youth programs, or we take for granted prayer meetings, Friday nights, or just going into practice, and all those things. Our church groups are really hampered by not having ability to do those. One of our organizations that has probably the toughest time, and I'm just looking for Peter. Where did Peter disappear to? Peter, you want to come up here and describe what your church is like? Your church building that you're renting?
I'm going to tell you something, and then before I tell you, I want to tell you that we serve a meal in our church every week, which is prepared off-site and brought there. So if you ever do eat there, it's all good. Just so you know. The church itself is actually belongs to the United Church. The only money they have to support that church is the money we pay in rent. A couple of years ago now, they told me that if we were going to use the church other than those few hours, it was $150 every time we walked through the door. So it's difficult to do Bible studies and that type of thing. But the structure itself is rotting away on the corners. There's only lights on one side of the inside. The windows, we put cellophane over the broken windows in the wintertime to keep the wind from whistling through. I describe it as the rattiest building on the res, and we only rent it, we don't even own it. In the basement, there's mold. Go ahead.
Sorry, where is this?
This is in Muscogees. It's formerly Hobima. Anyways, it's the only facility that is really, we're able to rent, that's in the core there. It's in probably one of the toughest areas in Hobima. There's a lot of things go on there that are tough and unsavory, and the building kind of represents that. But it's really, it's fair to stand, and I'm surprised that somebody hasn't helped it along its way.
Now, one thing Peter and his group do is they have a supply of paint on hand. And so they come early on the Sabbath so they can cover up all the graffiti week to week. So, in that area. Now, we do, the conference does hold a parcel of land for our church building. We don't have the finances right now to be able to put up a building there. And you know, even though we have some reserves, and we have some non-tithe reserves, when you have 26 congregations all looking, and for that, it can be gone very fast. The conference has, I don't know how many of you will be at the meeting tomorrow, but the one thing that we've been able to do in the last year we accomplished it, and we're going to be doing it again this year, is all the tithe that comes in from the local churches. After we send on the amounts for the higher entities, with Union and NADGC, we're left with about approximately 75%. We were able to spend more than that. That was directly linked to ministries, to the local churches and local schools. So we've accomplished that. People ask, where does our tithe money go? And I can say that your tithe money goes all up to your local entities. Right now, that's where we're at in the conference. And we're able to do that because we have some reserves, and we have some other revenue that comes in that isn't tithe based. So we were excited to be able to accomplish that, and I want to tell you that a lot of the reason why we've been able to accomplish it is from the work that our former treasurer Bob Holdall did for us. So we need to be grateful to Bob for his work that he's done. So I don't know, is there anything else, Lynn, that you would like?
I think you've covered it well, Keith. And our time is actually at an end. And that's kind of sad, because I really have enjoyed being with you, and I appreciate your interest in continuing to make sure that the conference has the resources it needs to carry on God's work. I promised people yesterday who didn't get all the handouts that I would bring them all today. So if there's something that you think you're missing, you can probably pick it up here. We have a number of the folders. If you didn't already get one, the complete set of the printed materials. And then some of the PowerPoints, including the farm PowerPoint and the power of attorney discussion that Ray Phillips did, and personal directives, yes, and Will's, his hints on that too. So all of that's up here. If you want to take back, the gift annuity information, there's a little summary of it here. And if any of you are thinking about looking at your will again, you can take this card. It's got a little summary of the things that you should put into will and things that maybe you should put into a letter that's kept with the will. But it's a good little handy item.